It is a curiosity to me. When you think about it, we celebrate this great feast of the Epiphany, this great moment of understanding, this great enlightening of the world. And yet, as you stop and think about it, have you ever noticed that wise men and wise guys are not the same thing at all? I don't know, it's fascinating to me. When you look at it, I look at the Feast of the Epiphany, I look at this incredible mystery, and one of the things that always comes to mind, one of the things that grates on me, that really bothers me in modern day culture, is when someone says, well, that's your truth. This idea that, you know, you have your truth and I have my truth, and, you know, we'll just sort of go our opposite ways. It is the strangest thing to hear that to me. There's a part of me that always wants to take a hammer and start tapping them on the forehead. And when they say, what are you doing? I always go, what are you talking about? That's your truth. My truth, I'm not doing anything at all. Because it's that ridiculous. Truth is objective. Truth is something. It isn't your truth and my truth. There's your opinion and my opinion, but there's one truth. I can argue about one flavor of ice cream until I'm blue in the face as a superior ice cream. That's an opinion. When we talk about ice cream comes from a cream of milk, that's a truth. These are simple differences. One of the things that I love about this Feast of the Epiphany, one of the most poignant things that sticks out to me, is it's strangers. Not Jews, not believers, not anyone connected necessarily to the very prophecies of what is to happen in Bethlehem, but complete strangers saw something so remarkable in their own life, something so incredible about the world, that they had to go see it. That they had to go see this great mystery, this great event that happened. It's often speculated, it's discussed wildly. You know, what did they see in the sky? And some people talk about a comet or a meteor shower, and then they say, well, that couldn't be because nobody else saw anything like that. And that would be true. Comets, people can see a comet in the sky, and anyone could record it. There were other historians at the time. But something incredible happened in the sky that was so particular that only those who studied the stars regularly would have noticed. And that number is greatly reduced. There's a lot fewer people that would have studied the stars every single night or would have had the leisure, literally the opportunity, the energy, and the means to study the stars every night. In order to be a group of learned individuals pursuing knowledge for the sake of knowledge, you would have been protected by a king. You would have basically served as his board of advisors, and the wise men would have had to have been someone who served on this council of advisors in order to have the leisure time to study and learn knowledge for knowledge's sake and look up and study the stars and really get to know the stars. One of the best known groups of wise men like this would have been the advisors to the king of Babylon, what is now modern day Baghdad and Iraq. And it's curious, with modern technology, we can actually look back at what the stars would have looked like in the sky on any given night and any given location. And interestingly enough, if you go back to 2 and 3 BC, there was something unusual that happened in the sky. There was something pretty incredible, and it wasn't any magic comet, it wasn't any mystical falling star, but Jupiter appeared in a very particular position in the sky. And Jupiter appears in the sky all the time. Lots of people can see it. Apparently it's very bright. You can't miss it. I'm not very good at astronomy. I studied it a few times. I really tried. I really invested. But I've got to be honest, every time I go out under the night sky, I look up and say, look, stars. I can't find any constellations. I found a Dipper a few times. That's about as far as I ever get. I can find Orion's belt. I can't find the rest of Orion, but I can find his belt. So I know he's got to be around there somewhere. You know, he doesn't travel too far without it. So, for my untrained eye, I look up, I just see stars. They're lights in the sky. It doesn't mean a lot to me. Every once in a while, I see a star and I think, wow, it's kind of moving fast. And then I realize it's an airplane, you know? I mean, I don't know these things. But for the trained eye, for someone who studied the sky regularly, Jupiter appeared from a position in Iraq, if you looked up in the sky, Jupiter appeared to the west. And it appeared to be just under another star. Now, in reality, they're not even remotely close together. But from that perception, it would have been under a star called Regulus, which means king. And Jupiter had primacy in the astrological charts for them because it was such a bright, sight in the sky. And so they saw a king star under a king light, and it appeared in their western sky. And it did it for several nights. Now, because of our perception of the way it looks, it actually kind of like Jupiter was bouncing back and forth right under that star, kind of like a halo being made, or a crown of some sort. And it was such an incredible sight to them. They knew there was something they had to see there. And if it was the men from Babylon, they would have remembered those crazy people that they conquered about 200 years prior, who called themselves of Judah or of the Lion. And Regulus is part of a larger constellation of the Lion. And so they went to their king and they would have said, "We have to go see this. There's something very important about these stars, that we have to go see it." And if they headed west, remember they're from the east, so in order to get there they'd have to head west. They could have showed up in Jerusalem and they could have said, "Where is your king? Because we saw it in the sky. We saw it in the stars. You might not see it because you weren't looking, or you might not know where to look, or you might not know how to look, but we know it's there." Of course they'd go to Jerusalem. That would be the capital city. It would make sense. Herod doesn't know anything about this. How is it that Herod and his wise men didn't know? They didn't study the stars the same way. They would have been in a different position. They wouldn't have seen it. But when they arrived in Jerusalem, they would have seen Jupiter in the south. And Jupiter would have appeared in the night sky right next to Venus. And they would have looked so close together. Obviously, we know they're vastly far apart. But they would have looked so close together that they almost formed one light. Kind of like your two headlights look like one light if you come out, if you're far enough away. It would have been one of the brightest sights in the sky. And seeing those two planets lined up almost next to each other would have been such a brilliant light that when they were told to go to Bethlehem, which is south of Jerusalem, they would have gone, and the star they would have seen would have risen to show them where to go. I find this fascinating, not because I'm some kind of astrologist who believes that suddenly our stars control our life path or anything like that. Actually, quite the contrary. I think it actually points to the greater mystery that God planned in the fullness of time, long before anyone could actually stop and worry about it, exactly where he was going to be born, exactly when he was going to be born, and planned it and wrote it even into the sky itself. Because it isn't about your truth or my truth. It isn't about some people's truth and other people's truth. It's about the one truth of the one God coming to visit his people. It was something so remarkable, even strangers could see it. If they knew what they were looking at. If they knew what they were looking for. They bring three curious gifts. The first two can work together and aren't necessarily curious by themselves. And remember, it doesn't have to be three wise men. It could have been 50 wise men, but we usually say three because it's three gifts. That's actually what we try that back to. It could have been 50. I mean, this was a group of traveling wise men who set out on one of the single most important events of their life. They bring three gifts. Gold, okay. They brought gold for a king. It was written into the stars. Gold for the king. Gold was a standard gift you gave to kings. That was pretty straightforward. They also brought frankincense. Frankincense is a gift you offer to God. The God King, that was pretty common. There were lots of places celebrated the God King. The Egyptians celebrated God Kings. Each of the pharaohs were heralded as great gods and kings. It's the third gift that is most fascinating to me. Because in addition to recognizing he's both God and king, they presented him with a gift of myrrh. Myrrh is a burial spice. You give someone myrrh because they're going to be buried. And you never give it to a newborn because that's kind of ominous. But it recognized that he was mortal. It recognized that he was going to die. And that is unusual. Because even though the pharaohs of Egypt died, they never really claimed to die. They built these pyramids and they're just really advanced tombs if you think about them. But they describe them as this great gateway to take them on to another life. And how they never really died. They insisted on this level of immortality. And yet, here they are, these strangers who would have been familiar with other cultures and customs, recognize the God King who would one day die. And that is truly remarkable and really does stand out as one of the most incredible things for us. And I find this all very interesting because it pulls us all together. It isn't just about one group believing something over another, but it's about one God looking after all of his people. And the signs are there for those who will look for it. And if you're having hesitation, if you're thinking, you know, sounds nice, a little coincidental, you know, kind of plausible, but, you know, maybe not, I want to challenge you. Before you right now, you don't have to look to the left or to the right or up or down, but literally in front of you right now are two instances of the images of all four evangelists. If you know where they are, that's great. You have trained your eye to recognize the images before you. If you don't know what I'm talking about, it's a very strong reminder that it can stare us in the face and we still might not know what's going on all the time. And it's not a criticism. It's just a recognition that the gifts are there. The signs are there. God is present. We just might not always see him every time.